Pastor, and today on Living in the Pages, I have the beautiful best-selling author, Kennedy Ryan. We discuss autism, domestic abuse, and activism, all in the context of this writer's life. I felt the need to extend this episode into multiple parts because the conversation goes to some meaningful places I don't want you to miss out on. Hello, Kennedy.
Hi.
How are you? Good. How are you?
Spastic all over the place. But otherwise, very good.
I am so excited to talk to you.
I feel like I
know you and I love you already.
Same. Right back at you, honey.
What are you up to this morning?
Kind of in release prep mode. I'm releasing a new book in the next day or so. So just kind of finalizing things for that. And some stuff for, I have an autism foundation that I run. And just doing things for that. And, you know, oh, and the Lyft auction. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of the Lyft for Autism.
Yes.
That we do. Yeah, we're working on that because that launches in 2 weeks.
Good. I wanted to talk to you about that. Yes.
Yes.
Tell
Did
us
I
all
send
about
you
it.
The information?
Yep. And I've done it the last couple of years.
I thought so.
Yes. It's awesome.
Thank you so much.
I'm hearing something.
It's probably my son. Sorry. He has
no, I thought
autism.
It was...
And he kind of screeches a little bit.
Okay.
So,
no, I thought it was feedback.
It is. It's him feeding back. Yeah. That's Miles, Poppy.
Oh, he's I'm like sorry. Me. He's singing.
Something like that. Okay. There you go. Now I am in a soundproof room. Just to give a little bit of context. For why I'm always screaming about autism. My son was diagnosed with autism when he was 2. So that was about 15 years ago. And I started a foundation for families who have children with autism 13 years ago. And yeah. I've run that for the last, I still run it for the last 13 years. Mm-hmm. And we serve Atlanta area families probably about 80% of our population that we serve through a few of our programs live below the poverty line. And a lot of them are single moms. So we help them with Christmas and things like that. But then we also have a program for married couples who are in crisis, either on the verge of divorce, just got a diagnosis, you know, whatever. There's some kind of crisis that's going on because there's an elevated divorce rate among couples who have children with autism. Mm-hmm. And then we have a summer program, like where we do scholarships every summer for families who can't afford summer activities or therapies. So I've been doing that for the last 13 years.
That sounds and like then... a full-time job right there.
yeah. So I do that. I'm the executive director and founder for that organization. And then I started writing. My background is journalism. So I've always written like Chicken Soup for the Soul and Modern Mom. But I was writing a lot around like autism advocacy, things like that. But I'd always known that I wanted to give fiction a try. And so when I started writing kind of in this world, I just kind of drag autism everywhere I go. It's just like, I say to people, if you cut me, I'm going to bleed autism. I'm just telling you. So as I started negotiating my way in the indie publishing industry, I just thought, wow, you know, there's so many good-hearted people and so much talent, and the readers are just so voracious that there might be a way to, I'm always looking for intersections, you know, in the things in my life that matter. So if I'm writing, I'm looking for ways that autism and my writing can intersect. If, you know, I'm looking for ways where these things can overlap in my life.
I love that.
Thank you. I don't know if you know Ginger Scott.
I've never met her, but I've read her books. Yes.
She is amazing. And her heart is as good as her talent. I mean, really. Ginger, she doesn't have a child with autism, but she has a nephew who has autism. And we both have a journalism background. So Ginger, years ago, had done this write-up on an autism organization that was just getting started. And she ended up volunteering with them for like the last decade or so. So Ginger's very entrenched in the autism community and in those causes. And she and I just started talking and just decided that we wanted to, every April, do something called Lift for Autism, because April is just broadly, you know, globally, it's Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month.
Yes.
And so what we do is we invite authors and others, but primarily authors, they'll donate signed paper bags, hard bags, you know, any kind of thing that readers would really be interested in. And we also have bloggers and other people. Last year we had, there was this huge New York signing last year, the Big Apple signing, that Southern Bell, that ended
love
up,
them.
Yes, that ended up being our highest bidding item. They had VIP passes. I don't remember the exact amount, but it definitely exceeded $1,000.
Wow.
it was
so great.
Just for that one item.
Wow.
And so that's what we do. We ended up raising about $30,000 last year. We have an auction, and actually it's going to be kicking in pretty soon. So good. When I say I'm working on that, I'm working on that. April 2nd, we will have a huge blitz where bloggers and anybody who's willing to shout for us will basically let everyone know the auction block is open just for viewing. Mm-hmm. So all the authors and bloggers and anyone who has donated those items, they'll be on the auction block. People can start perusing. And then the last week in April, the auction opens. Okay. And people can start. It is so much fun to watch because they watch their items all week and they just start this bidding war.
And how long does that go?
It goes for a week. Wow. Yeah. So the last week in April, bidding is open and it closes on that Friday. And so when it closes, whoever has the highest bid at that time wins the item. And so we partner with an organization called Culture City, and they're a national organization and they're doing amazing things. They're working with the NBA to make arenas all over the country sensory friendly for children who have autism. They have a Christmas program. They have an iPad program because so many of our kids who have I told you if you cut me, Willow. But so That's many of good. Our kids, you know, the therapies are now based on, you know, they're digitally based.
Yeah.
And for some schools, like one of my son's therapies basically required that he has an iPad. Well, when you talk about a family who can't afford an iPad, you know, that becomes a barrier.
Yeah.
And so we love Culture City's iPad program because they provide iPads to families who can't afford them.
That's amazing.
So we love Culture City. Yeah. So Ginger and I, that they're our charitable partner again this year. And we're just kind of working vigorously to get that going. So if there's any authors out there who want to donate, we will put your money to good use. And it literally goes straight to Culture City. We never see it. The auction is linked to Culture City's donation base. So the money goes straight through the auction, straight to Culture City. We don't get any of it.
Wow.
My foundation is completely separate. My foundation doesn't get any of it. It's a completely separate thing. So,
and how long do authors have to be part of it?
We will take donations all month. even once the auction is open, we continue to add items and we'll announce, you know, new item for bid, up for bid. So, because it's just sometimes hard to get the word out.
Right.
And a lot of authors don't even know about it until, you know, we're telling everybody,
happening.
Hey,
yeah.
And so then we always get authors who say, hey, I missed the sign up. Is it too late? It is never too late.
Okay.
We have taken big items like 3 days before the auction was closing. So, you know, our goal is just to raise money for autism. And so that's what Lift for Autism is. And I'm really, really excited about it. And Ginger, I call her my partner in good. She's amazing.
Aww. That's so exciting.
Yes, it is. I told you not to cut me, Willow, because I bleed autism.
It's good. I was planning to ask you about it, so I'm glad you told me right off. That's great. Well, congratulations. By the time this airs, your new release, Long Shot, will be live.
Yes.
And I am reading it now, and I love it.
Thank you.
As always, I love your characters and your writing. August and Iris's chemistry is so good.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm getting great feedback. I think I'm getting, I don't know how far you've gotten in the book, but
I'm pretty far.
It's not an easy book. But then, I mean, you wrote horror, so you are familiar with not easy books.
Yeah.
You know, so I like dealing with difficult material.
Me too.
And I know that makes me crazy, but I say, I know this also sounds crazy, but I write out of conviction. You know, I like to write when I have something to say. And I really had something to say with this book. I started writing this book 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't want to give too much away about the book. But by the time this airs, it will have been out for a week. So, you know. But there was an incident with a football player, Ray Rice, who knocked his then fiance unconscious in the elevator.
Yes.
And that video went viral. And I watched that video, and that night I started writing this book.
Wow.
Because for me, I was like, I'm going to write a sports romance, but probably it's my version of a sports romance, which is a little, you know, it's heavier. It's definitely heavier material.
The things that need to be said.
Yeah. I had a righteous indignation about that, you know, and I wanted to speak on it. And it ended up that you've read Grip.
Yeah.
And some of your listeners may have. This book was supposed to be published before Grip.
Really?
And yes. And some of my readers are like, oh, this Grip character, because Grip and Bristol from the Grip series show up in my first self-published series, which is the Soul series. And people kept asking me, when are you going to write his book, her book? When are you going to write their book? And I was like, I had never planned to. And I'm writing this sports thing. And they're like, forget about the sports thing. You need to write Grip and Bristol. And we actually decided to try to pitch Longshot traditionally.
Okay.
Because I'm a hybrid author. So I have 4 books that are published traditionally and then several that are, you know, self-published. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, maybe this is the book, you know, where we'll try to venture back into traditional publishing. And that's a longer process, you know.
Yes.
So they asked me to write the first 3 chapters of Longshot. And I did. And we actually got pretty far down that road. But I ended up deciding that I didn't want to do that. And the publisher is great. It's not them. It's that I wanted to tell this story in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And I knew in a very raw way that I knew probably there would be some differences of opinion
right.
about how it should be done. And I wanted to do it this way. And so I walked away from that deal. And I had written the first 3 chapters because they need that. You know, I actually had published, so they knew, okay, she can write. She's got 4 books that are traditionally published. We know that, but we still need to see the first 3 chapters. So I'd written the first 3 chapters. But then by then Grip was out. Flow, Grip, Still, those were out. Then I was going to write it. I was going to put it out before Still, which is book 3 of the Grip series. And I didn't, you know, everybody, I wasn't even going to write Still. And then one morning I woke up with this, like, kind of vowels probably in my head. And I said, oh, now I have to write Still. So I did. And this book just kind of was off to the side. And so after Still, book 3 of the Grip series was out, I said, okay, now I'm going to write Longshot. 2 years
Man.
Since I saw that video. And I started writing it and realized that I could not write it because, you know, it addresses domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just put that out there. It addresses domestic abuse. And I will be honest and say that I was judgmental about women who are in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And as I sat down and started to write, I realized that's all I had. You know, all I had was growing up thinking, gosh, why don't they just leave?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way anybody would ever hit me and I would stay. And there's no way, you know, I had there's a bravado
right.
That I have. And I know a lot of women have where I can't even imagine being in a situation like that and quote unquote tolerating it.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I sat down to write it, and I have never been hit by a man. Never, you know, I have never been, sexually assaulted. I've never been accosted. No one's ever smacked me in the face. You know, I came into this situation with a righteous indignation, but really nothing else.
Mm.
And so I set the book aside for 2 months and I did nothing but interview survivors
wow.
and interview social workers, interview the staff at women's shelters, for about 2 months and didn't write anything. And it changed me. It changed the way I thought about it. And I'm not saying there aren't, you know, situations where someone stayed too long, but the complexities of having children mm-hmm. with an abuser and the access that they have to your children, continue to have to your children, the complexities of joint custody with someone who has tried to kill you.
Yes.
But the justice system, leaves us a lot, you know, it leaves a lot to be desired as far as how it protects victims of abuse.
I was so glad you covered that too.
Yeah, I had to. And the reason I had to is because as I interviewed these women, I was just like, this is complicated. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, maybe I would find a way to get away. But I talked to women who, you know, they had been in marriages, in relationships for years with a man who was completely fine. And then one day shifted into abusive behavior. But by then, they had made decisions about how they would live their lives. Women who had decided to stay home with their, you know, agreed with their life partner. I'll stay home. Yeah. I've done that. Okay, you work. I'll stay home with the kids. Mm-hmm. But when that man shifted his behavior and left that woman in a financially vulnerable situation with these tentacles, yeah. you know, really tied around her. And I talked to women who the husband literally, deliberately totaled their car so they wouldn't have transportation. Oh. I talked to women who their husbands would lock them in the closet at gunpoint. I talked to women who, you know, their boyfriends would steal their debit cards and take all their money. It's just, it's not as easy as just walking away, you know? Yeah. And I think that people don't really, and I apparently when you cut me, I also bleed domestic abuse, but I don't think people realize 70% of homicides associated with domestic abuse happen when the woman leaves.
Wow.
So when that man says, when that man says, if you leave me, I will kill you. Mm-hmm. 70% of the time, that's what happens. Oh. You know, I'm saying 70% of those cases happen when the woman leaves. And I even, in my research, there was one woman who, and we don't give them jail time. You know what I mean? Right. It's like we slap them on the wrist. Our justice system slaps them on the wrist. They get probation. And they're still out here. And this one, I think, if I'm remembering the details correctly, he had gotten just a little bit of jail time and she got away and she's living her life, maybe 3 or 4 months. And he just shows up one day at her door and she starts running and he shoots her in the back. And I'm thinking, why do we leave women this vulnerable? You know, why do we allow people who have obviously said, I will kill you, I will threaten you. We leave women in a dangerous, volatile position when we say as a culture, when we say as a society, you just need to leave. You got to get away. And then our justice system doesn't protect them from predators. Yes. And so that is really the crux of what I wanted to deal with in the context of a love story. You know, I
which think is so that, hard to do.
Yes. And I think that gets lost. You know, it's still a romance. There's still a love story, but there's just these issues are layered into that love story. So anyway.
Well, I'm so glad you took your time with it because it shows, first of all.
Thank you.
And then and helps us all think about these things that we might not have considered before this. So it worked.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to write from a place of compassion and grace and understanding. And it's so funny because two of the survivors that I interviewed ended up being beta readers for me,
really?
Sensitivity readers. Yes. And the book is dedicated to them. I dedicate the book to Paula and to Natalie. And they were two of the women who shared their stories. I mean, they bared their souls,
wow.
You know, and they are inspirations to me because I don't know if, oh, I don't want to get emotional, but, you know.
Yeah. Say it. It's good.
When I hear the things they endured, I don't know if I could survive those things, you know. And they found a way to and protected their children. You know, these are women, one of them sleeping with a butcher knife to protect her children. And then to hear that people judged her, you know, when she, judged her for how she handled that situation. And she was like, I just want people to hear our story and to hear our side of it. And I've gotten so much judgment from people saying that I'm weak. And when you hear her story, there's
how
no way you can call her.
She is.
Yes, there's no way you could call a woman like that weak. And so I'm so sorry to be emotional about it.
No, but, I'm so grateful that you're an advocate for them. And it makes the book all that much more special to me now, for sure. That's
Thank you.
Remarkable. Really.
It's really their story. And I keep telling people that is, I didn't want to exploit their experiences at all.
No,
but
you
didn't. I found myself as I was writing it, so much of the things that the survivors had told me made, you know, their way into the story. And people keep telling me at times it doesn't feel like fiction. Like at times it feels like real, you know, and I think that's why, is because a lot of these things in some form or fashion happen to real people. Yeah. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks so
sorry.
Much for sharing that. Please don't be sorry. I'm so glad you shared that.
The continuation of this interview will go live in the next few days. If you'd like to hear when it airs, subscribe and you'll get a notification as soon as it goes up. Note, the next episode, things will lighten up for a bit. First up, Life with a Baller and Kennedy's Personal Basketball Romance.
So you love basketball?